This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to Season 4, Episode 7 of How to Build a Sustainable Music Career and Collect All Revenue Streams. I am still traveling around the UK on this live podcast tour, our first ever international tour. We're excited to do more in the future. So today I'm in Manchester, England, home of one of my favorite bands, Oasis, certainly one of the most influential artists on me. As listeners know, I talk about that probably way too much. And today we're at the Yard in Manchester, where I'll be bringing out the legend that is John Robb shortly. But first, we're going to talk about how to market with or without a budget. And I also want to share that today's podcast is brought to you by our friends at Bandzoogle. We want to take this time to congratulate Bandzoogle members for surpassing £100 million in commission-free sales of music, merch, and tickets through their websites. Bandzoogle makes it easy to build a stunning website and online store for your music in minutes. All the features you need are already built in, including dozens of fully customizable templates, tools to sell music, merch, and tickets commission-free, mailing list tools to grow your fan list and send newsletters, integrations with Bandcamp, SoundCloud, YouTube, Bands in Town, and more, so you can easily add content from your other online profiles. Plus, live support from their musician-friendly team 7 days a week. Plans start at just £7 a month, which includes hosting and your own free custom domain name. How to Build a Sustainable Music Career and Collect All Revenue Streams podcast listeners can go to bandzoogle.com to try it free for 30 days and use the promo code SUSTAINABLE, all caps, to get 15% off the first year of any subscription. That's bandzoogle.com, promo code SUSTAINABLE. And I also want to give a massive shout out to The Word from the Ivers Academy. Supercharge your knowledge and career in the music business and in the live environment with 14-day Kickstarters, 12-week boot camps, and a fully validated diploma. All online, maximum flexibility, maximum impact. Get more info at The Word. That's the WRD.UK. And The Word folks have booked this entire tour, so I wouldn't be here without them. And I'm really grateful for that. Okay, so as you know, we are covering the entire modern music business over 12 episodes, taking you from recording to release while ensuring you're not missing any revenue streams along the way. So let's recap where we've been. We've covered getting your art together, so you're making art that's true to your heart, your soul, and your spirit. We talked about pre-recording marketing foundation and monetizing your music before it's even out, while ensuring your text and email lists are in place. We've discussed how it's crucial that you sort out how everyone is being compensated before you hit the studio. We also chatted with Church Studios' head engineer on how to record with or without a budget. We discussed how before you distribute your music, it's crucial that you ensure your songs are registered so you're not missing any income on your songwriting. We talked about how to distribute your music for maximum income. And today, we're going to chat about how to market with or without a budget. So let's get to it. Okay, so we've distributed your music. It's out there in the world. The first thing that I want to talk about when it comes to spreading the word on your music is a note on attitude, okay? So it's very easy, especially in the world of social media that's programmed basically for FOMO, fear of missing out, to see what someone else has going on and think, why do they have that and I don't have that? And I truly know and feel and believe that if you focus on your own green grass, right, like the grass is always greener on the other side, that you will truly get there. But if you absolutely can't handle the FOMO, you can also reach out to the other artists that you're admiring. Drop them a note, see if they're up to get a coffee or a Zoom, you know, so you can learn from them and vice versa, because it might surprise you to learn after you chat with them that maybe they've been admiring what you have going on, right? So just try to keep that FOMO in check. These social media platforms are built, you know, to be addicting, and there's a lot of issues around that. But hopefully I'm going to teach you how to use them in an empowering way for yourself. I also want to touch on balance when it comes to marketing and spread the word. I think we all know people, whether it's in music or beyond music or in anything, that get so obsessed with this stuff. They are totally focused on the marketing aspects and, you know, attending conferences and press and all that stuff, that they lose sight of the art, right? And so I'm constantly bringing people back to chapter one, episode one, get your art together, get your art together, get your art together, right? So if you love the marketing elements and social media and email, all that, I encourage artists to limit their time on all of that to an hour a business day, because otherwise you're just going to get sucked in. Like I said, these platforms are programmed to be addicting. There's, you know, computer engineers at the best schools in the world all learning, like, okay, red means this, or, you know, whatever, to draw people in, because it's the attention economy. So you need to cut yourself off and make sure that you're taking care of yourself as a human, but you're also not losing sight of who you are as an artist, because that's what it's all about. And if you loathe all this stuff I'm talking about, social media, responding to emails, everything like that, you should also carve out an hour, a business day, to ensure that all of these elements are getting taken care of, right? You know, we heard from Sinead Campbell in this season's premiere in episode one, talking about her process, right? Like, she has kind of, if I recall, like 2 days of office hours a week where she takes care of all her emails, admin, social media, and that allows her to be an artist and a human those other days. So please keep balance in mind with all this stuff. You know, if doing all these marketing things without great art equaled success, then everyone would be able to do that, right? So we want to make sure you're taking care of yourself and you're not losing sight of who you are as an artist. Okay. A note on budget as well. I want to mention this. You know, if you do have some sort of a budget for PR and that's something you're interested in, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later because I don't even think it's the most important thing. Okay, so the first thing you want to do when a release is out is make sure that you get it out to your Patreon fans, your text club, and your email list. You want to let them know that it's out, you know, maybe even drop it a day before the official release day, because you want to make these fans feel special, because they are. They've given their permission, given you their permission to be able to contact them via text, via email. They're supporting you every month via Patreon. So when it's time to post on social media, this is something I preach a lot. I hear, or I see artists all the time, usually, you know, not the biggest artists, on day one of their release, pushing their Spotify link out. And as we talked about in episode two, you already have either a pre-order or a Patreon running. So if you have a pre-order running, to me, the A-plus version is to post on your social media on day one of your release. And when I say day one, your music can absolutely be out on streaming. I'm not saying don't be on streaming, but let folks know the best way to support you is to buy bundles on your website. That's where you're going to have the highest profit margin and collect the most fan contact info for future use. On day two, post on your social media that the music is out on Bandcamp. That's where you're going to have the second highest profit margins, and more often than not, collect that fan contact info. And then on day three, a whole 72 hours after your release, then share that Spotify link or whatever your preferred streaming platform is, right? And then on day four, you could share the Apple Music link. Day five, you know, Amazon, Tidal, and keep going. And that way you're continuing to post about your music on social media without explicitly saying the exact same thing over and over, if that makes sense. Also, as always, tag everything that's taggable. I mean, that's, you know, basically social media 101. So tag Spotify, tag Tidal. And that goes, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about this in the live episode. Just always tag anything that's taggable, right? So whether it's other artists, whether it's venues, whether it's concert promoters, folks can't pop, you know, what you're doing up into stories and, you know, re-X or retweet or whatever we're calling it now and share it if they don't know about it, right? So tag anything that's taggable, add in some hashtags as well. That way folks can easily find it when they're searching. But I also think hashtags are nice because it just helps the text pop a little bit instead of it looking a little too long, didn't read. Now, most folks are relatively used to social media at this point, but if you're really overwhelmed by social media and you don't know where to begin, check out my friend Arielle Hyatt's books. She's written multiple books on social media that's geared for musicians and she's been on the podcast as well. That's one of our most popular episodes, not surprisingly, because Arielle is a genius. But, you know, she was a publicist in the pre-digital era. And then when things shifted, her clients were asking her all these questions and she had to educate herself, right? So Arielle also has a great email list with a ton of free tips. So check out her company, Cyber PR, for a deeper dive on that. But otherwise, you know, tag, and hashtag is social media 101. Also, I still see this. If you are using Twitter, I know Twitter X, you know, the user numbers are going down, but I'd be remiss not to say, don't open a post with an at symbol, because that's just telling the platform that you're replying to someone else, and the vast majority of your followers aren't going to see it. If you do have a small budget, you know, don't be afraid to throw an ad spend behind a post to boost a post on Facebook and on Instagram in particular. You know, I've been getting this question on this tour, if folks need to, you know, boost every single post. I don't think that's necessary at all. But save even, you know, if it's a 10-pound ad spend, you know, 20-pound ad spend for your release, right? Like, hey, that it's up on your website. Hey, that it's up on Bandcamp. And same for when you have tour dates and something that you really want to push and spread the word on. From there, whether you have a budget or not, you want to make sure that you're getting back to every friendly fan. And if that gets overwhelming, it can just be a heart or a favorite. You know, think of how you would feel if your favorite artists replied to you, even if you didn't necessarily grow up in the social media era. And another really important thing to do when you're replying to fans, especially if they're like, when are you coming to Manchester? When are you coming to Liverpool? Reply and say, here's my email list link, or here's my community.com text link, or I just toured the platform Open Stage here in the UK. That was really great for email and texting. I don't think it's quite open to the public soon, but stay tuned for that one. And so just reply with your link to your MailChimp email list or your text list and say, well, sign up here, and then I will let you know when I'm coming to Manchester, Liverpool, Newcastle, etc. You know, for me, I'm not always perfect at this. I've only made a mistake on this a few times, but it always comes back to bite me in the bum. I try to only post things on social media that are positive, right? So if you're overwhelmed by what to post on social media, I have a friend who, this was years ago, obviously, but he worked at a management company that was looking after John Legend and Lenny Kravitz. And some of those artists were like, well, what do I post? Like, what do I post on Twitter or these? Again, I'm dating myself with Twitter, but hear me out. And my friend Jordan gave a really good example, which was first follow accounts you're interested in, right? So if it's other artists, if it's news, if it's sports, right? And kind of view these sites as a river of information until you're ready to jump in, right? And share something or reply to something. But other than that, you know, for me, the golden rule of social media has been to only post positive things on the internet. And that has worked really well for me. I haven't posted complaining about something in a while, but when I do, it always comes back to bite me. So in my experience, if you stick to posting positive things on the internet, you can't go wrong. You also should pin the post on your release, right? Especially the one driving traffic to your website, driving traffic to your Bandcamp. So that's crystal clear on all of your pages. And, you know, from there, I also recommend checking out Arielle Hyatt's website and her books for more Spotify deep dives. I have more information on that in the book that this podcast is based on. Also, sign up for Pandora's AMP tools. They have great artist promotion tools, and they also offer office hours where you can literally, you know, pop in and attend and ask questions and create. And beyond office hours, you can create station IDs, right? So you could say, I'm not an artist, but there are artists named Emily White. We actually work with one named Emily Jane White. So you could say, I'm Emily White, and this is my Pandora station. Thanks so much for listening, right? So there's some great tools through Pandora's AMP program, which is totally free. And also remind your audience to check out Pandora. It's funny. This is very random, but I was just talking to the Secretary of State of my home state of Wisconsin, and she's like, I love Pandora. I know that makes me kind of old school. I also listen to Pandora a lot during the day because it's just a nice, you know, radio mix of artists and genres and songs that I'm into. So don't neglect Pandora. Okay, so SoundCloud. Look, you know the genres that are popular on SoundCloud. I've never really loved, well, I'm even saying that too nicely. Like, SoundCloud doesn't pay you, okay? They are just mining your data. In fact, I researched this recently for the second edition of the book. You actually have to pay like £80 a year to monetize your music. And I'm not saying like everyone in the world is following me on social media, but I did post, is anyone making money from this? I mean, someone must be somewhere, right? So I don't think SoundCloud is a priority unless you know your genre is on there, right? So that's very often going to be in dance, EDM, rap. But add your email list, add your text list to the list so you can mine that fan data right back. Instead of just handing that data over to SoundCloud, right? Otherwise, I've used SoundCloud pages just for the private function for unreleased music, but I certainly don't think you need to be pushing your music on SoundCloud. Otherwise, again, unless you know that your scene is on there, but I repeat, add your email list, add your text list to it. So you're retaining that fan data and getting something out of it because they are certainly getting something out of you. Okay, so all of that was free stuff, I believe. I talked about ad spends a little bit, but that's really not necessary. I mean, I'm not an artist, not that I have like a massive social media following, but I've built a very organic following over the years just by being myself and being positive. And I certainly wasn't, you know, running ad spends at any point. I mean, I'll boost a post here and there, like for, you know, this tour and things like that. But in the years leading up to that, I was never doing ad spends. So if you do have a little bit of a budget, I mentioned PR first, not because I think it's particularly important, which I'll talk about, but it is important to some artists. And again, I'll talk about this in a second, but I'm talking about this now because if you want to work with a publicist, you need to let them know as far in advance as possible, okay? Like at least 3 months, maybe even 4 to 6 months, and see what rate they're going to quote you, and then I would cut that in four, basically. I mean, I was really nervous to write this part of the book. I thought, oh my gosh, my publicist friends aren't going to like me, and actually, they love this book, which blows my mind because I'm telling you guys to ask for, you know, a lower price. Maybe you're going to get quoted like a few thousand pounds a month. I would ask for like £1,000, maybe see if you could even go down to £500 if you're paying it yourself. But the publicist friends like it because I'm also helping you to help them. Okay. Which already saying reach out to them as soon as possible because they get hit up by people like, okay, my release is out tomorrow or my release was out last week and they're not going to have time to do any work. But first, you know, like, why are you even interested in PR, right? Like, in the pre-digital era, if you got written about in the NME, in Q Magazine, in Rolling Stone, in Spin Magazine, that would absolutely equate to sales, right? Like I would read about those in magazines as a teenager, go drive my car, buy a physical CD. I mean, that's quite a few steps, but there was a direct return on investment. Now, there really is no return on investment when it comes to PR. When I'm working with a publicist for an artist, I'm very upfront with the publicist that we're just looking to get a press hit or two or three that I can then use as a tool to help them get a booking agent or to help the booking agent get gigs or to help them get a publisher or a sync team or to help the publisher or sync team land syncs, right? So it shouldn't matter, but press can be a nice tool and FOMO effect. The other thing you want to do is be really upfront with your publicist about goals, right? Now, if you come in and are like, I would like to be in the New York Times, NPR, on the cover of whatever, I mean, we all want that, right? But the publicist is going to be very realistic with you and say, well, you're not quite there yet, right? So they're going to help you chart a path to build towards that. But the other really, really important thing is if you have landed any press on your own or organically, make sure they know that. Because I've also seen artists spend, you know, thousands of pounds, thousands of dollars when they're already getting good press on their own. And then they fail to inform the publicist, like, hey, here's the writers that always write about me. And then the publicist is doing her job, right? She's like, oh my gosh, I landed this review, this feature, this preview. And then the artist is disappointed because they're like, oh, well, I already knew all those people. I could have reached out to them myself. But the publicist didn't know that, right? So make sure that you're informing your publicist. Here's the journalist that always write about me. She's likely going to be like, great, that is awesome. We'll make sure that's taken care of. But that's going to give her something to build off of. And you can work together on realistic and reasonable goals from there. And when you post your press, okay, just like when you're posting about your release, that we're going to talk more about gigs in the next episode, tag the outlet, tag the journalist, tag everything that's taggable. So few artists do that. And most of these media outlets have very strong followings. Many of these journalists have very strong followings. So it's likely that the outlet and the journalists are going to, you know, share, retweet, add to stories, all that good stuff, follow you back, right? But they don't know that if you're just like, okay, here's a link and nothing's tagged. So that's really, really important. And you can also spread out these posts, right? Because you could, you know, Twitter's the easiest way for me to explain this, but I can translate this to Instagram as well. You can post, you know, an organic post on a piece of press saying like, thanks so much to at Mike Greenhouse, at Relics Mag, you know, for writing about our new release, and then link to it, and then go on and post something about football or whatever else you have going on. And then the next day, you could go to Relics Magazine's official account and then re-X or re-share their original posts, right? So there's other ways to mix in spreading the word on that press without saying the exact same thing over and over. And again, when it comes to Twitter or X, then search for that headline on there and you're going to see fans and other people posting about it. And you can sprinkle in those retweets, re-Xs, and shares, right? And so you can do the same thing on Instagram, right? You could post an Instagram tile, you know, with the piece of press you landed, but then go to the outlet's Instagram account, you know, the next day, add it to stories, right? And again, always make sure that you're tagging the journalist and outlet. So few artists do this, and that's greatly going to help you out. So the other thing you want to do, so your publicist, you know, help your publicist help you, is one asset organization, right? So when you're meeting with them months in advance, let them know you're going to have high-res press shots, have links to your music ready to go, right? Like just have everything like totally gorgeous, organized, easy links that folks can download, not huge attachments that clog up inboxes, especially for industry people that travel all the time and are dealing with slow Wi-Fi on trains, planes, and hotels and all that good stuff. You also want to be respectful about communication, okay? So if your publicist services a press release or they're doing some work on your behalf, don't email them all the time or, you know, first thing on a Monday, like, did we get anything? Did we get anything? Like, all you're doing is clogging up your inbox or clogging up their inbox, and it's just going to slow down the amount of time they can work on your behalf. Set up Google alerts for yourself and your project, and then, or you even search for yourself on Google News, and then you can see this stuff come in real time, and then that's going to free your publicist up to get out there and work on your behalf. I remember I was having lunch with a publicist friend years ago, and I talked to her about how my management company has a 24-hour business policy when it comes to replies. So what we mean about that, whether it's like to an intern or me replying to another executive or whatever. So if I get an email on a Friday at 4 p.m., I'm giving myself until Monday at 4 p.m. to respond. That way folks don't feel like, okay, I have to respond within 2 seconds. You know, it allows them to breathe and be human a little bit, but it also ensures that everybody's getting a response. I'm not perfect at that, right? Like one of my best girlfriends said to me that she knows if I don't get back to her right away, it just means, God forbid, I'm busy, right? But that does add accountability, and it makes sure that everyone gets a response. So when I mentioned this to a friend who is a publicist, she nearly fell out of her chair at lunch because she liked that idea so much, because artists were constantly like, have you gotten anything? Have you gotten a response to the press release? Just like hitting her up over and over. So she liked that idea so much, she added it to her email signature saying, I will respond within 24 business hours. And then that lets her get on with her work on your behalf, right? So just be really respectful about communication. Think about what it's like on the other end of the inbox or the other end of the phone when it comes to texting. Okay, finally, this is the most important thing when it comes to PR. However you are getting press, on your own, organically, with a publicist, grab the email address of anyone who's writing about you and pop it into a Google spreadsheet. We call ours, for our artists, Fancy Friends, and that way you are building up a database of writers, bloggers, tastemakers that support you. So whether you have a publicist or not, say you have a publicist, right, and you have some money for PR for this release, but later on you're going on tour or you have a video to promote and you don't have that budget, you are building up your own, I'm dating myself by saying this, but I don't care. You're building up your own Rolodex that's actually extremely powerful because you know that these folks already support you. And guess what? Writers and journalists love hearing from artists that they love, right? Obviously, you don't want to spam them and be contacting them all the time, but if they wrote about you, they're going to be cool with hearing from you directly in the future. So that's what I really consider to be sustainable PR. Anytime someone writes about you, email addresses are very findable, so start building up your database. Okay, so I want to touch on radio. I've definitely talked about radio, American radio, you know, throughout previous seasons. I'll just touch on that briefly, and then I'm going to bring on a special guest before we talk to John, just to touch on UK radio, because I'd be remiss not to do that. But, you know, radio in the US, you can do a college radio campaign for a pretty reasonable fee, probably, you know, £800 to get rolling. And you can work with companies like Planetary, Powderfinger, Terrorbird. And there's really great folks that work there who are going to give you honest feedback, who are going to say, yes, this is great for college radio, or wow, this is, I mean, I don't know if they'll use this word, but you know, this is a little more commercial. Maybe we could go to AAA radio, which is, it's bad. I can't think of the whole acronym right now, but it's like adult alternative album format, basically is AAA. But similar to radio, you know, like I've seen tons of artists chart on college radio, chart on also specialty radio, which are usually Sunday night shows on major stations that play local artists. But then the artist is frustrating because they're like, well, nothing happened. Nothing in my career really changed. So when you're getting any airplay, post about it, right? Say, thanks so much to KCRW is huge in LA, but like, that's what came to mind. Thanks so much to KCRW or Radio Milwaukee or, you know, say a DJ's name, right? That's been spinning you and tag the radio station, tag the DJs, and the exact same stuff is going to happen, right? It's going to allow the stations and DJs to follow you back, to add you, to spread the word, and it looks great, great to your fans. So if you are working with some sort of radio promoter, or you're working with radio stations directly, make sure they have all your tour dates. Let them know that they always have access to the guest list, that they have access to tickets to give away to their listeners, that you're available for interviews, that you'd love to come in and do an in-studio performance if you're comfortable doing that, that you can do so on tour. You can also come in for an interview. Just let them know you're available because, again, if just hiring these companies equaled success, then everybody could just go do that, right? Very few people take advantage of the tips that I just shared. So that's exactly how to stand out and make the most of these campaigns. I'll just add one last thing before I bring on my special guest to chat about UK radio. You know, when it comes to college radio, there is not a way to measure this, but the students who run their college radio stations tend to be the tastemakers within their friend community. They often go on to become, you know, music supervisors. We talked about music supervisors in episode 5 when we were talking about syncs. Those are the folks that make the decisions on songs that are in films, TV, adverts, all that good stuff. So a lot of times those students go on to become industry folks, right? So you can build some relationships there, and hopefully they're spreading the word on your music to their friends because you're the go-to for, because they're the go-to when it comes to knowing about new music. One last thing, you could also start a podcast, right? Like start your own radio station. I was working with an artist who didn't feel like he was connecting intimately enough with his fans on social media. And so he launched a podcast to do a deeper dive on his songs, right? So definitely consider that. Okay, so we're running out of time in this amazing studio that we're in. But I wanted to chat with Manchester artist Emma Mould to give us a little bit of an insight into how radio works here in the UK, because it's very different than the United States. Not that the United States is the center of the universe, but that's where I'm from, and that's what we've talked about. So welcome, Emma.
Thanks, Emily. Yeah, lovely to be here.
Absolutely. So can you explain to me, like, what the difference is, because there's like BBC 1, 2, 3, all the way up to 6 music, right?
Yeah, so you've got Radio 1, BBC Radio 1. Yeah. So that's your pop music, right? Prime time, sort of like A-list, you know, like majors. So yeah, your major like radio stations. So breakfast hour or early morning drive to and from school runs, you know, you're going to hear the charts, you're going to hear pop music on Radio 1. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, it's big. Now, don't be fooled, because Radio 2, it's kind of like the biggest audience, I think. I'm not definite sure on statistics, but BBC Radio 2, mm-hmm, it's a bit more kind of like, so when I was a young kid, it'd be like my nan and granddad would play Radio 2. My grandma and granddad, and it was like Terry Wogan, and then it was like Ken Bruce, and these real, like, you know, it makes you feel like you're in your kitchen having toast, you know. Yeah. So it's real homely, and so Radio 2 is an amazing station to get played on. Mm-hmm. And they play all sorts from like country, folk, a real mix of a new artist as well, but it's more like you get to know the DJ, and it feels like a kind of, and it feels like an atmosphere, not just about the music, if that makes sense. So that's Radio 2. And they do also, the thing with BBC Radio as well is what I found, you've got like DJs that are in, all right, Radio 1, BBC Radio 1, BBC Radio 2, BBC Radio, there's Radio 6, which 6 is like the music, like 6 live music. You've got like DJs that discover artists and release them to the world, you know. So, I mean, for me to get play on Radio 6 would be like amazing. It's actually just down the road, you know, it's funny, a Media City. So you've got all of that, and you've also got like BBC One Extra, which play all like grime and rap and spoken word. So you've, what's great about BBC is it's eclectic, but it is a little bit compartmentalized. Yeah. So you kind of need to know So for an artist like Muse Eclectic, it's a nightmare because I'm like, oh no, because each song on each album is a bit, you know, different. Where does this belong? So what's great about emerging artists in the UK is this thing called BBC Introducing. And BBC Introducing, you upload your new tracks. Anybody can do it. You create an account and then you upload your track onto BBC Introducing. It's like a website. You put your profile in it, like you do on Spotify or whatever. Write a little bio and where you're from. So it's local. So for example, I'm in Manchester. So my it's BBC Introducing Manchester. And then it's divided in all the regions. You've got Lancashire, you've got London, you've got like the southwest, north, blah, blah, blah. And each station, you like, so BBC Radio Manchester, I'll upload my music to them. And it does get listened to. They do listen. And over the years, so Ed Sheeran came up through the ranks of BBC Introducing from apparently, but heaps of other amazing artists. And it's a brilliant because it's leveled the playing field a bit. And also, so for me, my little experience on BBC Introducing was I uploaded it. This is my debut album. And I thought, they'll never even listen to it because, like, you just don't know the people on the other side of the email. It feels like a bit overwhelming. Well, I couldn't believe it. They listened to it. And then I got this email, like an automated one. Your track has been listened to by BBC Radio, like Manchester Introducing Team. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I'm freaking out. And then it got play. I got a play, which is amazing to be played on BBC Radio. Mm-hmm. So that's great because then you begin to meet people at, you feel like your music. And then what was even more cooler for me was I got like handpicked randomly, and I still to this day don't know how it happened, by a show called, it was called Georgie Tonight, I think it was.
Is that a Nottingham thing? Because I learned what Georgies are.
Oh, no, that's okay. Geordie. That's Geordie.
Oh, Geordie. Geordie. Sorry, that's guys. It was based on King George. That's where I got that in my brain.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's like Northumberland way. No, so it was a female DJ, Georgie Spanswick, I think her name was. And she had a show, and a producer on her show picked up my profile and basically chose me to be the introducing artist of the week.
Wow.
So I got my whole EP played in 2018. Don't forget, at this point, I'm just releasing music, selling the CDs out of my handbag, not knowing anything about what you've just spoke about to do with radio pluggers and all this, that and the other, thinking I had no money, I'd run out of my budget, had gone just at the mix, the mastering part of my album. And I was like, I don't know what to do. So we uploaded it. It got picked up. And the next minute, my songs were played, not just in my region. So like if you're Manchester Introducing, they play you in Manchester. But this was picked up and played across the whole of the UK and Ireland. What was even crazier was I was like getting followed by people in Canada because they were playing BBC Radio in Canada in a stadium where my song came on, and this person said, oh, I know that accent. It's a Manchester accent, you know, of my song. And then like literally found me. I got people all over. So that was extraordinary because I'd been locked into Manchester for years, still am to a degree. And I was like, oh my gosh, people like me outside of Manchester. No way. I never thought that was a thing. So BBC Radio is amazing. And as much as like, I know it's having its issues at the minute with funding, and the introducing team, I think, are having a hard time, but it's incredible for emerging grassroots artists.
Wow. Thank you.
I hope that helps.
That is so helpful, yeah. Emma. Thank you so much for your insight. And where can folks, you know, find you and your music and all that good stuff?
Well, I'm trying to improve myself, but I am there. Insta, Facebook, Spotify, you name it. I'm out. Emma Mould. Thank you.
Awesome. Brilliant, brilliant insight. Thank you, Emma. Okay, so I just have two last things to add, and then we're going to bring out John. Music videos. I've talked about this before. It really pains me to say this because some of my best friends are filmmakers and video directors. I don't think you should break the bank on music videos unless it is, you know, a really strong creative vision for yourself. Like, you know, like... In the pre-digital era, folks would spend millions of dollars on music videos. And if you got played on MTV or VH1, there would be a return on investment. Now we have access to nicer cameras than what they were using in the 90s. on smartphones. So if you have access to a smartphone, start playing around with that for your video content, or see if you can work with, you know, a friend who's interested in that, or if you have a small budget, you know, work with someone who's a little more focused on that, or reach out to a film program and film schools and see if there's any students who are interested in building up their reels, okay? And finally, I just want to touch on brand sponsorship and endorsement partnerships. I've been pitched by a lot of people who want to be on this show talking about this stuff. But first, you have to build up a genuine following, right? Like a lot of times I hear from artists who are interested in brand sponsor and endorsement partnerships. But one, they don't have a following. But even if you do have a following, you have to have very strong engagement numbers, right? So we've had Julia Nunes on the podcast before, which is an artist that my company manages. And Julia has such strong engagement numbers that brands reach out to us every day about her, thinking that she's an influencer, which she is, but naturally, as opposed to an artist, right? So that's really what you have to focus on. The key word here is partnership. They want to get something out of it as well. But these are most effective, and you guys know this, even if you're an artist, you're a fan as well. The most effective partnerships are what's authentic, right? So I don't recommend working with any sort of brand, sponsor, partner that you don't feel good about. But don't be afraid, you know, to reach out, you know, start doing product trades. You could also work with nonprofits, right? You know, you could get, you know, free stuff if it's a smaller brand, local brand, but also be mindful about how you got to where you are, right? So really quick with Julia Nunes and Patrick, can I have like 5 more minutes? Okay, love you. So with Julia Nunes, I'm sure I've shared this before, but we did a deal with a major gear brand, and I've seen this with athletes I work with a lot too, where they're just like, you know, with the athletes I worked with, I remember one example, a headphones company was like, we want the athlete to post, you know, 3 times a week on all of his socials. And I had to explain to them like, hey, that's spamming. And that's really going to turn his audience off. I've had to say that to a few brands who want to work with some of the Olympic swimmers I work with. And to be fair, the brands listened to me, right? They realized I wasn't trying to like get out of stuff. I always ask brands, what are your goals and initiatives? So that way we can get creative and make sure this is mutually beneficial. But back to the Julia example, we were working with a major gear brand that everyone has heard of. And again, to be fair to that brand, we were actually working with an ad agency. So again, Julia has built up this brilliant following by being herself, right? Being her funny, interesting, creative self. And so she would come up with all these cool ways to spread the word on this piece of gear. And the ad agency kept tweaking it, kept changing it. And I was nice about it. At first, I was just like, hey, you know, what's going to connect with her audience on this gear is Julia being herself. And they kept tweaking, they kept changing. And I think I pushed back a second time and they weren't getting it. And I finally had to be like, this is an artist. And someone at the ad agency finally wrote back and said, I used to work at Vector, which is a big management company. I totally get what you're saying. And finally, they let Julia do her thing. And the campaign ended up being really professional, really successful. So don't be afraid to share what has worked, right? But also be realistic when you're reaching out to these brand partnerships.